All right. Yeah, let me get to that. It's the key to what we're going to talk about today. But I want to ask you a couple of things before I get there. As always, other than the homework, is there anything that either of you would like to discuss?
No.
Suzanne, do you have anything?
No.
Okay. So I wanted to touch upon, and I don't spend too much time on it, but I want to touch upon practice growth. Something occurred, you know, I don't know if it was a real opportunity or not, but another FA asked me if he could come and rent an office from me and work out of my office. And it made me start thinking about that. And what I concluded was I'm just not there yet. I don't want to bring somebody else into the office that would possibly derail what we've begun in terms of our own practice here. And so I was sort of thinking, you know, have you ever been in that situation where you've rented out office space and possibly shared some services, so limited amount of services, but, you know, possibly, you know, hiring another assistant to help them while you continue your practice and let them, you know, almost like they would run their practice the way that they run it, but then I would be running my practice how I want it. It just seems to me like there could be contradiction in there and problems. And so I was wondering if you had ever experienced that or come across that in your coaching experience.
Frankly, no. I have been asked about teaming a lot, but you're not talking about teaming. You're just talking about somebody paying some expenses, correct?
Yeah, exactly. It's not like they're joining my team. They just want to, you know, run their shop out of my office, you know?
Is this person successful, Paul?
Yeah, he's successful in his own way. He's like an old school broker, and you know, but he's just kind of in his own world in a way. You know, he's not like conforming to modern investment. You know, he runs old school brokerage, kind of selling stocks and ETFs and some mutual funds, you know, but he's a trader. He's a day trader, you know.
Oh, we used to call those guys get a hunch, buy a bunch. my initial feeling is I don't like it. If you'd have said, yeah, Rob, this guy's killing it. I love him. I could see him being a partner 5 years from now or whatever, then I'd be a little more open to it. But you know, I worry about things back given to Susan to do. Suzanne, I don't want to – you all are in such a role. I hate to have you take your focus off of it.
That's exactly what I came to conclude.
Yeah, and whether he's part of your team or not, he is representative of your office.
Absolutely.
And you know, day traders, I've never seen one make money. It's all done with a lot of emotion. I just don't see it. I could tell you, I could think about it, but I just, you know, it's like forming a team. The best teams, two successful people going together, not one that's successful and one that's not, because you dilute the effort. So my comment to him was I'm just not there yet. We've got a lot of things going on. I just want to see those things to fruition before I start expanding the office. And how old is this guy?
He's probably got 10 years on me. I'd say he's about 55 to 60 in that area.
Yeah. Well, who he is what you have with him now is what you'll have 10 years from now. He's never going to turn into a service-driven practice. I don't like it. If you said to me, Rob, I really need it to help with expenses, then you could wade through it. But I don't need it. Okay, then I think we've talked about it enough. I would be polite. I'd be respectful, and I'd make that call today, and get it off your plate. So, make sense?
Yeah. So let me ask you this: if down the road, so being Supernova, if down the road, I find somebody that I think would fit well with me, fit well with Suzanne, that was on board with Supernova and also, you know, would work well with me and my, then to me, that's somebody I would consider. But just to rent space to give somebody, a door, a front door to put his name on, and then he could disappear off the Florida or wherever else just to pay me $2,500 a month.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the right business. Am I right?
That's not the right reason to do it. The only reason to do it would be if you needed the money for expense, and you say you don't. One other thing, if he would hire his own assistant, there's going to be some stuff that assistant goes on vacation. Well, where's the work going to go? It's going to go to Suzanne, and I don't want Suzanne to be focused on anything else but helping you grow your practice.
That's it. Yeah, we're on the same page. I just wanted to make sure I was thinking about it the right way. Okay. It took me about 3 days to turn around on that one. At first, I thought, maybe I should do this. And then after I slept on it, I was like, you know what? This is going to derail what I'm doing. It's going to mess me up. Sure. Because this guy's just he's a different animal. You know, he's just a completely different kind of advisor.
It's a dying breed. Those people are dying and dead. What was that old Paul Simon song? Nothing but the dead and dying in my hometown. That's where you're going. And here's what you do. Tell him you work with an outside consultant, a coach, and you rent it by me. And I said it's too early for you to do that. I'll be the bad guy. I've been the bad guy a lot in my life. I handle it really well.
All right. I'll give him your cell phone number.
Okay.
That's a joke.
We're going to reconsider some other things here. Okay. I know I've said this to you before. Repetition is good around the right thing. The reason that I always start every meeting with, is there anything you all want to talk about first? That's not just a throwaway. You want to be listening to what the client says. Because if they got something on their mind and you start talking about something that's not on their top plate, then you miss opportunities and you're not being sensitive to the client. So again, you don't have to say it the same way every time. But Ms. Jones, I've got a lot of things to cover today. Before I get started, tell me what's keeping you awake at night. Tell me what's going on with you. All right. Each month. Each question. Okay. In January, you told me that you were off to a great start. You talked about a couple insurance policies with a couple more in the works. And you mentioned a client, and I think I've got the name Maureen written down, who asked you if you took referrals. Anything that you would add to this list of successes since we last spoke?
So Maureen's referral was her nephew that she's giving $18,000 or $19,000 to. And so it's not a really great referral. But he is her beneficiary. If anything happens, he gets half of her money, which is substantial.
Yep.
So it's good. Yep. The insurance, listen, we have We have two that went out the door that we got paid on in January, which were pretty sizable. And then we have two right now that have both been, or one has been applied for and we're waiting to hear back on. And the other one, we're filling out, we got permission from the client and we're filling out the applications and sending them in probably by the end of next week is what I would expect. We'd get it done. We're trying to get it done either this week or next week. So now, you know, so insurance, and then we sold two financial plans. I'm still waiting to get confirmation on the third one. We sold two financial plans, each for $2,000 each, which is huge. I mean, we're off to a great, great start.
Okay.
Now, what I've learned is that since I emailed you last week, I said, you know, we were going to increase business by, you know, we may increase business by $200,000. That was our goal. Well, after I looked at the payouts of the insurance, I misunderstood the payouts, and I miscalculated. So it's not going to be that much, but it should be closer to about $150,000. So that'll put us at right around $450,000, I think, should be our target for the end of the year, which is $150,000 more than we did last year. So
okay,
I mean,
so your target is what?
So my new target is $450,000.
Okay, and last year it was what?
Last year we hit, at the end of the year, I just got my 1099, we hit $306,000.
Okay, that would be, that's a 33% increase, roughly. If you grow at 33% for the next 5 years, you'll fire me and start teaching and making a lot of money. I'm not making fun of being up 33%, not even close. I think you can do more. It might not all hit this year, but
Rob, the biggest struggle I'm having is bringing in assets. I don't have any new clients. I've got clients that are bringing us in. You know, we've got a lot of great compliments. We've got a lot of great little things that are trickling in. 529, hey, I got this 529 in Franklin Templeton. Can you take a look at it? Absolutely. We end up bringing that in to become the agent of record. Hey, you know, I've got $100,000 in this CD. You got something better for me? Absolutely. Bring it in. We bring it under management. The issue I'm having problems with are new clients and getting them referred to me and getting them in the door. What I'm getting is a lot of people's children and their nieces and nephews, and they don't have any money. I'm not getting that, you know, I want to get that, you know, 500,000 plus new client, and it's just, I don't know where it's at. I have a list of people, I have a pipeline, but I just don't know where it's at. I don't know where it's coming from. And, you know, I used to know off the top of my, I could tell every month what was going to hit. I had something hit every single month that was at least 500,000 or more. I can't do that right now. You know, it's not happening. So I'm hoping that, you know, I'm trying to figure out what else I want to, not another direction, but I mean, should we be firing, you know, should I be looking at LinkedIn? I mean, like, I had a guy call me the other day from MFS and he said, hey, I looked at your LinkedIn page. You know, I think you should tighten it up. You know, if you want some coaching on that, let me know. So I called him up and he gave me a couple, you know, I never really used LinkedIn, but he showed me how to use it a little bit. And he's telling me that's how other advisors are getting clients. And I thought, I don't know, should I be doing this? I mean, is it true? Are people really getting clients by doing this? And so should I be doing other things too, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, the answer is there's always more you can be doing. I think the LinkedIn thing, I think, is important, but only I don't think somebody's going to see you on LinkedIn out of the blue and say, I want to call this man. It's nice to be able to refer people to a LinkedIn page. I don't want to say it gives you credibility, Paul, but it's just nice to see it.
when I would recruit for Merrill Lynch, I would go in and find out as much as I could about the person. When I get a new client at Supernova, I go in and learn as much as I can about that person, just so I can be, direct what I'm talking about. So here's what I'm. You've taken. I understand the referral from Maureen. Didn't you tell me she's your best client?
No. I mean, she could be. She might be on my top 20 list, but she's not one of my best clients.
Okay, but did she know you have a minimum of $500,000 unless there are extenuating circumstances?
Yes, I've gone over that with her, yes.
Okay, but she's still referring $19,000 clients to you.
She asked me if I would take care of her nephew who's interested in, and this was the one who remember we talked about last time, he's the beneficiary of her IRA. And so under those circumstances, that's extenuating.
Okay. Well, here's what I would – we talked about always using common sense. If he is going to be the beneficiary of a nice piece of money, then that's an extenuating circumstance. But you got to make sure that you get recognized for what you're doing, that you strengthen your brand. Maureen, I'm happy. As you know, I have a minimum for new business of $500,000. But because this is your nephew, I'm happy to help him. You see how you're talking about your brand? You're doing her a favor. As opposed to just, okay, I'll be happy to talk to him. You see the difference?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. And then, again, you've got a referral page for each of your clients. You look at you're getting ready to have a conversation with Maureen. You review the referral page. The information is there about her nephew. And you're finishing up with Maureen, and you say, Maureen, I've met with I've talked to your nephew. We had a nice conversation. Do you know anyone else who fits my ideal client model that you think would fit in my practice? So, do you understand? You do it, but you take credit for it. It's like if you do something for a client, you got to make sure they understand that you have not done a favor for them. That's like a handout, that you have you have helped them with an issue. So the somebody who's got a $100,000 CD and that's a standalone thing. Is that a real example or is that hypothetical?
No, I mean, she already had $1.5 million with me, and she had $100,000.
Okay, well, I thought you were talking about a one-off $100,000.
No. I'm just saying, existing clients. How some clients are. Usually people that have money, they're like onions. The more you peel them back, the more you find. It's just this one family that I have, and it's astonishing. They've got money everywhere. They have so much they don't even know what they have anymore. She just realized that she had this $100,000 CD, and she said, "Hey, can I? You have something better for me? I'm not getting good rates at the bank." And at Jones, we would turn around and say, we would use this as a hey, maybe I should be calling all my clients and saying, ask them a question. How are you doing at the rates at the bank? And turn it around and say, and see if there's more assets. And they'll say, I got this CD. And it's really bad. You would say, okay, when'd you come and do it? I might have something for you. And then you would have that part of your pipeline. I haven't done that. And I was thinking about maybe I should be doing that just to kind of spark the, you know, get more assets from people. So,
okay.
I don't know.
So this person with the $100,000, did you ask them, did you have an opportunity for a referral conversation?
So she's, yes, I've done Vespa with her. And she right now is on the verge of, she has another $1.5 million account that she feels that she's being neglected. And so she is weighing bringing it over, but she is reluctant because she doesn't want all of her eggs in one basket. She's worried, you know, about Bernie Madoff and all that stuff. And so she doesn't want to blow all her eggs with me, but she's saying that she's neglected at this other place and she wishes that the other guy was like us. And so I'm hoping she'll bring that over. But in the meantime, she's got these other little things that she's bringing in the door. So, you know. But, yeah, I've had a conversation with her, and she says, I don't know, my kids, you know, like everybody always thinks it means they're kids. And, you know, kids are great, but, you know, kids don't have any money. Friends.
Yeah. Who did the compliance? Who did the compliance for Bernie Madoff?
Oh, I don't know.
Somebody who worked for him.
Yeah.
Who sent out Bernie Madoff's statements? Bernie Madoff.
Yeah.
So it's if you are a rogue financial advisor, you know who's going to write the biggest check?
Ameriprise.
Who does your compliance?
Ameriprise.
Somebody who has no allegiance to you.
That's correct.
So when this lady talks about she wishes you had that money over, but she's worried about having all the eggs in one basket, that's an objection, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so what do you do when somebody has an objection? You confirm that you heard it. I understand why you might think that way, Ms. Jones. But I think it's important that you understand that I don't do my own compliance. That's been done. That's done at the corporate level. I don't print my own statements like Bernie Madoff did. That's done at the corporate level. So you don't have just me sitting here in Ramsey, New Jersey. You have corporate headquarters of a Fortune 500 company. So I've heard that before. You know, I don't want to have all my eggs in one basket. But it just, in this day and time, with a major corporation standing behind you, you don't want to say it's not an issue, because that's minimizing their objection. But if she's more comfortable with you, she ought to be with you. Yes.
Oh, Paul, isn't the person that she has other assets with just a, like, sole practitioner?
Yeah, I never even heard of his company, you know.
So
yeah.
He's like a Bernie Madoff, possibly? I mean, not like him, but opposite of Ameriprise.
You mean his corporate structure, yeah.
You got to be careful, Suzanne. You never want to be out like you're trolling with bad news and raising objections.
No, I know. I just wanted to be clear. I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
if that's your concern, then.
Yeah. When's the last time you had a conversation with her, Paul, about bringing her the rest of their assets over there?
2 weeks ago.
Say it again, please.
2 weeks ago. 2 weeks.
Okay. Have you done a financial plan for her?
No, she won't let me. She's one of these people that are so rich that they don't think they need it, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
How much do you think she's worth?
Maybe $4-5 million.
Yeah. right.
Well, she probably is okay unless she develops bad habits. But yeah, should are there you know, if you have a market that goes down, I'll make something up, 40%, she's not going to feel the same. She's still probably okay, but she's not going to feel as confident. Agreed?
Yeah. Yeah, she'll probably.
Who's
one of my first clients to call me. Yeah.
So if she's, you know, you can manage the downside better if you have the whole thing, and I don't want to, you don't, that's a negative way to put it. This is just between among the three of us. But sooner or later, this market's going to correct, and it's you don't want her to get hurt. So I'm and not knowing the lady specifically, it's hard to know exactly how to approach her. But on a regular basis, I mean, it's I would just have the conversation. Ms. Jones, we've talked about this before. I think it's important I think it would be helpful to you, your peace of mind, to have everything in one place. Well, gosh darn, Paul, I don't know. I just hate to have all my eggs in one basket. I understand that. I've heard it. I would just like to have you in your portfolio reflect your risk tolerance, something like that. So, you know, I don't know anything else to do except to bring it up on a regular basis. Not every time you talk with her. But when you think it's appropriate, I don't have a better answer than that. I've heard of this issue before, and there's really, you can't force her to bring it over. You don't want to be pushing her. Nobody likes to feel like they're getting pushed. You just want to be there to help her. Sooner or later, I mean, I know how people feel when the market corrects a lot. I mean, it's not a pleasant feeling. You've lived through some of it. I can't think of anything else to add to that conversation. Can I move on?
Yeah, please, sure.
Okay, so let's go back to Marine. And again, we always want to be talking about our brand, just talking about it, not bragging about it, but just talking about what we do. She asked you if you take referrals, and I just written down what might be a good idea. Maureen, I do take referrals. I consider it a great compliment when my clients think enough of what I do to introduce me to their friends and coworkers. I can take referrals because I control the number of people in my practice. You see how you're putting out your brand? And then...
Yeah.
And then you always, you're not looking for names, you're looking for favorable introductions. And you say, you know, let's say she wants to refer somebody to you who fits your ideal client model. And what the referring person normally says is, I'll have them call you. As I've said to you before, that call seldom comes.
Right.
And so your response is, what's the best way for me to get in front of them? That's what you're looking for, a favorable introduction. What is the best way to get in front of them? And then you shut up and listen. All right?
Okay.
All right. Now, one other thing. excuse me. As it has to do with VIPSA, you don't have to wait for somebody to give you a compliment. You always are looking for an opportunity to be able to talk about your brand. You're not talking about your money management skills. You're talking about your brand. You're looking for opportunities. So if no one is giving you that opportunity, maybe you say something. You got a good relationship with somebody, and you've brought you're bringing a new piece of business over, whatever. and you say, I'm surprised you haven't asked me why I should do business with you. Or why I'm surprised you haven't asked me why I should do business with you. This is the client talking. See, okay. See how you can get a conversation started? And then, yep. Now we get into the meat of what to talk about here. I'm in the process of going over. You got a little time?
Yeah. We have an hour.
Okay. All right. Why should someone do business with you? I know this is a repetition. It's important. Here's why you should do business with me. I've got a concierge practice for a limited number of people. Number two, my practice is planning driven. Number three, I have a formal investment process. And number four, it's all wrapped by unparalleled service. You've got to know you got to be able to talk about your brand. People used to call that an elevator speech. It's not an elevator speech. It is what you do. So that gets us to the brand accountability. And if you could get those sheets in front of you that you sent back to me. I have a concierge practice for a limited number of people. You've got written in here under what we do, we follow the supernova hardwiring. I'm not sure what that is.
Which one is it? Where are we at? Brand accountability planning?
The concierge practice for a limited number of people. Under what we do, you have written, we follow the supernova hardwiring. It's page number.
I see it. So, what we believe. Okay. So you guys wrote in what we believe, and what I'm saying is that we're focused on building a brand around Supernova and using all the tools that we're. So you want me to be more specific? That's what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. I can.
Yeah.
I'll fix
well,
that.
Let's paint this picture. And I wouldn't. I think this would happen, but you say here's what my clients get, and one of the things you say, a concierge practice for a limited number of people, and somebody says, "Oh, really? No. What do you mean?" We believe that we can't deliver a concierge practice with too many clients. We have a minimum for new business. We always want to have room in our practice for people who mirror our best clients. The brand accountability, the concierge practice, is what you do. Then if you say you do that but you don't do it, you're really lying to yourself. So what do you believe? You believe you can't deliver a concierge practice with too many people. You've got to be able to not defend your brand, but describe your brand. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think that No, I think that it's just I believe we do that. I don't think I honestly believe that we're doing that. We're working in that absolutely working in that direction. I think this is just, you're right. I could have been more specific.
What I want, it's important. Confidence is a wonderful thing. Not arrogance, but confidence. Did you watch any of the Super Bowl?
Until the middle of the third quarter, yes.
Yeah. Did you notice, Patrick Mahomes, this pretty confident little guy.
Yeah.
Did you see his body language change? About the middle of the third quarter is kind of when it was, you figured out it was all over. But the whole body language of the Chiefs, it didn't display confidence.
Right.
So when you know you're delivering, you will, an FA will put themselves in difficult positions. I mean, outside their comfort zone is what I mean, if they're confident. If you were walking by a burning building and somebody had panicked right in the doorway, they were afraid to do anything, you wouldn't have any confidence, any reason. You'd reach in and pull them out because
right.
you knew that it was the right thing to do. You, when you can defend your brand, you come across differently. You're not making it up. You're not begging for dollars. This is what you do. This is how we do it. And this is what we do. This isn't what we're going to do. This is what we do. Well, I don't think what you're in front of a prospective client. Well, Paul, I don't know. I just don't know if it's what I want to do. Well, just know that when you deal with me, this is what you're going to get. This isn't what we're going to do. This is what we do for our clients. So I want you to be able to defend your brand. It gives you confidence. Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best, how do you think, what number would you give yourself as far as delivering a concierge practice?
I'd give myself an 8. I think we do a really good job.
Okay. The only thing that I would ask you to keep an eye on is taking clients that do not fit, do not reach your minimum. That's hard to do sometimes, but unless there are extenuating circumstances, you're not living your brand. Again, we got to apply common sense. You've got a doctor who just moved to town. He's got $100,000. He's a cardiovascular surgeon. He makes $700,000 a year. I think that's an extenuating circumstance. So what we're talking about here is defending your brand. So you give yourself an 8. You give yourself an 8. Okay, on the planning.
Well, what number do you give us? What do you think we're doing?
I would probably give you an 8 or a 9 around your minimum. But again, you know, I'm not sure it's reasonable, Paul, to be at a 10 already. I mean, you're already doing things differently than you were doing them 6 months ago. You'll continue to get better at it. So I give you...
What I'm saying at 8 is because what I see where I came from in the group, and then I see how refined and dedicated Suzanne and I both are to the clients. And then on top of that, I'm listening to the clients as I'm talking to them, and they're complimenting Suzanne and how prompt she is in getting back to her. They're saying, Paul, thank you so much. The positiveness I get from them is very encouraging. It gives me the confidence that you're speaking about. I didn't have that before. I didn't have that when I was in the group. In the group, there was always something wrong that was being missed. And so now I feel like we have a good grip on what's going on. The area that I think that I'm lacking is exactly what you're pointing out, but it's more of the verbal choice of words. And it's not that I'm afraid to do the VIPSA, or I'm afraid to do what you're saying. I think what I'm not doing is I'm not executing on holding myself accountable. That way, when I walk into each appointment, I'm holding myself accountable, saying, "Okay, I've never done a VIPSA with this person. I need to do a VIPSA with this person. Make sure you do a VIPSA by the end of this conversation, and give myself credit that I did the VIPSA." a lot of times I'm just trying to focus on rebuilding the portfolios. You know, I'm trying to do the financial planning, and somewhere in there, in my own absent-minded way, I forget to do this part of it. But I think that our service is there. I think that our service is every week it's getting better. Just this week, Suzanne figured out how to electronically enhance the financial planning process. That just blew my mind. It completely changed how we're going to do financial planning and make it 10 times more efficient. Last week we defined something that it took me 10 years to realize that there are how to really think about a problem that a client brings to us. How do we look at it? How is it resolved? So then I put together a system as to how to think about it. Is it a number one, a number two, a number three? A number one is something that can be resolved in the branch. A number two, we agreed it's something that has to be resolved with home office. A number three, this is something that has to be resolved with another company. And so it's going to take longer. And so just having that train of thought, I know that we're getting better. Now the distance, here's what I always thought, and I knew this when I was a student. The distance between an 8 and a 10 is going to be greater than the distance between a 4 and an 8 because it gets so, you know, the details, the devil's in the details. The details are going to become so fine.
I don't think I agree with you. I think the difference between a 9 and a 10 is much less than the difference between a 4 and a 5. It's just when you're at an 8, you're doing it well. It's like you just said, we're just putting a finer point on this thing. You say things differently. You ask for referrals differently, whatever. So I tell you what, your competition isn't at an 8. But that's not your reason. You know, you want to be a 10, but at an 8, Paul, you're so much further ahead, than most of your competition. That dysfunctional team you were in, where were they with service?
In my opinion? In their opinion, they're a 20. In my opinion, they were maybe a 5 average. I would give them about average. You know, they were very antiquated and backwards on how they solve things and how they solve problems.
You did a blind test and you took one of their clients and you showed what you do, you showed your service model, and then you showed who their present service model is. It's all blind. They don't know which is which. Which one do you think most people would pick? What you're giving or what that other team was giving? And you know the answer is clear. So the reason I say that is you have to get in front of people. You have to tell your story. Now I know the answer here. I already know the answer. I hope that doesn't sound arrogant, but I know the answer. But I'm not going to give you the answer. I'm not going to give you the answer until we get through these brand accountability things, and we're going to do that really quickly. So let's brand accountability planning. Everybody gets an opportunity to do a plan. You can't make them do it, but everybody has to be given the opportunity. Let's see. I got so many notes on here. Okay, the two key planning questions. You're in front of a prospective client, and you talk about you've got a planning-driven practice, and she says, I've already got a plan. You've heard that before. Okay, that's an objection. You got to demonstrate that you heard it. So you say something along, I'm glad to hear that. It's very important to have a plan. May I ask you two questions? You remember what those two questions are? Here they are. The two questions are.
Are you asking me? I thought you were asking her. Oh, good. Yeah.
Oh.
Good.
No, you're asking when the client says, or your prospective client says they have they've already done a plan. You confirm that you heard what they said. I'm glad you've done. You say I'm glad you've done that, and you say to the prospective client, may I ask you two questions? Well, sure. Well, the first question is, how often is your plan reviewed? And the other question is, has it been fully implemented? Well, I'm not sure. Well, part of what I do is make sure that it's one thing. It's important to do a plan. It's even more important to implement the plan. Do you see the conversation you can have around that?
Yes.
This is defending your brand. On that, do you have that page in front of you, page 3?
It's brand accountability dash planning. Is there a gap between what you believe and what you do?
Well,
what we believe and what we do. Is that the one you're asking about?
Yeah. Now, let's talk about. You ask. It's important that the balance sheet is, both sides of the balance sheet are addressed.
What does that mean? I don't know what that means.
Okay. Most FAs, when they complete a plan, go immediately to the asset side of the balance sheet, stocks and bonds. They want to get their hands in there. When in fact, that may not be the most important thing. And I'll give you an example. My son went through a divorce. It wasn't a pleasant divorce. And after 6 months, after the divorce was final, his wife was still the beneficiary of his retirement plan. So that's kind of important. There's no commission in it for the FA. But there's a lot of you get a lot of credibility. You see what I'm saying here? You can't just look at the stocks and the bonds. You have to look at both sides of the balance sheet. You have to look at their loans. You've got there might be a cheaper way for them to borrow money. I don't know, but you can't just do a plan and then you only talk about the assets. You with me now?
I am, yes.
Okay, now, let's look at the next box down under what we believe. And what I wrote here is highly competent professionals are brought in when needed. And this will lead to something we won't get to today, centers of influence. But if you had a client call and say, Paul, I'm really sick of my CPA, never returns my calls, he doesn't get it done on time, I've been audited 3 of the last 6 years, who would you recommend? Do you have a go-to CP?
It depends on the client, but yeah, I have two that I usually refer people to.
Okay, all right. What? Same question about an attorney. If you had somebody who wanted to write a will, who would you refer them to?
I have one. I have one lawyer that I use.
Okay. What about can you sell life insurance?
Yes, I do life insurance.
Okay. Now, the policies you've talked to me about, are those long-term health care?
So they're hybrids. We do hybrids. We do the long-term care as a rider to life insurance.
Okay, so you can handle the insurance side in-house?
Yes.
Okay. What about, can you loan money?
I can, but I don't.
Okay. What about, can you can't do property and casualty insurance, can you?
No.
Okay. Well, again, with talking about looking at the other side of the, both sides of the balance sheet, there's a lot of fluidity in property and casualty. Who's charging what and how much and when and these things, you know, you can put in your car now and it tracks how fast you're going and if you're obeying the speed limit and you get an automatic discount on your auto insurance if you do that. Maybe that's something that you could talk to a client about. All I'm saying, living your brand on the planning side is being able to help a client with almost any financial issue. So if some property and casualty folks make a lot of money. I mean, there's some that are pretty small practices, but some of these folks are making a ton of money. A good source of referrals if you had a good property and casualty company. We can talk about that next month. So there's a lot to the planning. Let's see, I've got, what's this note say? We've already talked about that. All right. So what would you give yourself on plan? 1 to 10.
I'm thinking here. I think our planning is getting better, but I think that we made a key decision, which adds to this. You know, there's two types of plans you can produce at Ameriprise. One is more quantifying, so it's a lot of graphs and a lot of numbers, and the other one is more qualifying, which is more focuses on, you know, it gives you maybe one or two graphs, but there's more of a focus on the whole estate. And so we went with the one that focuses on the whole estate, which addresses or include, it's include, all these things are included in that. And so I think that we're probably a 6 or a 7 on that right now, but it's something that I realize that I have holes in it. I do. I have holes in it. There's some things I wish I did better. And
Stop. I don't want to hear that. I can do all these things. You're doing a lot of things better. You're just improving. Don't beat yourself up. FAs, I don't know what, FAs are just sometimes just beat themselves up when they should be patting themselves on the back. All right. You've got a little work to do. Now let's go back on the planning. I put 6.5. That was between 6 and 7. The lady who won't do a plan. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was her name? First name?
Barbara.
Okay. Barbara, if I could only solve one financial issue for you today, what would it be? That's a great question to ask a prospect. And maybe you'd want to ask it a little differently with Barbara. Just say, financially, is there anything that keeps you up at night? Is there anything that bothers you? Whatever. And she said, well, I think I'm in good shape, but, you know, with the volatility in these markets, I'm a little concerned. Can you do, are your plans modules? Can you do parts of a plan? Can you do it's not called a sensitivity analysis. What's it called? When it gives you the probability of hitting your goals. My mind's going blank.
You mean Monte Carlo?
Yes. Can you do a Monte Carlo simulation on Barbara without doing anything else?
Yes. Yeah, I can do it.
Okay. Would that be a good start for Barbara? Barbara, you've been reluctant to do a plan. I hear you. You know how important I think it is. I have the ability to do a Monte Carlo simulation for you, which will give you the probability of hitting your goals through various markets. I think it'd give you a lot of peace of mind. There's no charge for it. I think it would make a lot of sense. Yeah, Paul, that sounds really good for me. Well, do you know what she holds at the other firm?
About the same as what she holds here is about 1.6, 1.7.
No, do you know what investments she holds?
No.
Okay. So with her statement, her monthly statement, you could do a Monte Carlo simulation for her, right?
Correct.
Okay. Would that make sense for Barbara? And Barbara, if you do this for Barbara, and you take it back to her, and you say, I got some really good news for you. We've done the analysis, and you have a 93% probability of hitting your goals. Not my goals, your goals. That gives people a lot of peace of mind. She said, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen, Paul. Well, thanks for saying that. I do a lot of things for my clients. You know anyone else who might appreciate the same peace of mind that this gives you? Got it? So what I'm saying is if you don't have to do a whole plan to get that process moving forward. How old is Barbara?
She's about early to mid 70s.
Okay. Good health?
I think so, yes.
Married?
Widowed.
I can't guarantee much of anything, but I could almost guarantee you that she'd love to see what a Monte Carlo simulation looked like for her. And it's a lot more fun to do those when the market's up than when it's down, because that's when most people, you know, are motivated to do something, is when things get choppy because they get scared. All right?
Right.
Okay, so okay, formal investment process. Okay, I've got something that I'm going to send you. If I ask you to explain your formal investment, your process, could you do it succinctly?
No. I was going to
ask you. I'm going to send you something that says it's just investment process. This could be your investment process. I don't know if it fits you. It fits most people like you who have supernova-type service. Number one, I balance risk and reward. You don't need to write this down. I'll send it to you. I balance risk and reward. I do this through a financial plan that includes risk analysis. Number two, I establish an asset allocation that meets my client's risk profile. Number three, I select the assets that fit into the asset allocation. Four, I monitor and rebalance the portfolio. Most people are doing that. They just can't say it. And here's what that would sound like with a client. You're in front of a prospect, excuse me, and you say, Mr. Jones, could you describe for me your present provider's investment process? How many people are going to be able to describe their investment advisor's investment process?
None. I have no idea what that is.
And Mr. Jones' response, I'm not sure. Well, let me explain my process to help you understand the question. The first thing I do is I balance risk and rewards. I do this through a financial plan that includes risk analysis. Using that plan, I establish an asset allocation that meets my client's risk profile. So the first thing I do is balance risk and reward. The second step is to establish an asset allocation that meets the risk profile. The third thing I do is select assets that fit into the asset allocation, and frankly, this is the easiest part of the process. Because if I do steps one and two correctly, a lot of investments are eliminated, and the selection of the assets are much more optimal. So the first thing I do is balance risk and reward. Second thing is I establish an asset allocation that meets your risk profile. The third thing I do is select the asset. And the final step is monitoring the portfolio and rebalancing on a yearly basis. Does that make sense to you? Mr. Jones, yes, it does. Your response? This is the differentiating question. In what order are you doing those things now? Well,
yeah.
My advisor calls and says I ought to to buy this or I ought to buy that. Well, that to me sounds like step three without having done step one and two. Got it?
Yeah. I like it. And I am doing that, but I don't say it that way.
Yeah, you're the gentleman who wants to office with you?
Yeah.
He's
not
doing
that. That way.
No. Right. He's not. And he's probably got some people that would love to be doing it your way. All right. Okay, so we've got the brand accountability, and then the final thing is unparalleled service. That one you've got. We don't want to spend a lot of time there. One of the things that you told me on this homework is you're having clients that are holding out from scheduling. Is that still the case?
Yeah, we have like about five clients. Yeah, guys, you should talk about it.
Okay. All right. Suzanne, can you force them to schedule?
I even tried things like just throwing a date out and saying I scheduled them for this day.
Yeah.
That was my latest tactic, and somebody did call me back based on that and said, I can't do it then. But give me some more dates, throw them out to me, and I'll get back to you. He didn't. The other people, they just don't answer. They just don't respond.
Okay, can you make them respond? Can you make them schedule? Can you force them to schedule?
I'm not sure how I would do that if I I don't know.
Can't. The answer is no. And
oh, okay.
You force them to do it,
okay. How would you do that?
Yeah, I'm just looking for a simple answer. I wouldn't even want you to force them if you had to do it. I could ask them to try it, but I'd never force them to do it because that's not what you do. All you can do is really bring it up on a regular basis, Paul. I mean, if Susan, both of you should have a list on your desk, people who have not scheduled. And then, Paul, you just, along the lines of, I was talking to Suzanne about your relationship the other day. She said you've been reluctant to schedule. Is there any reason that you're uncomfortable scheduling? Well, I just don't think I have the time for it. Well, could you try it for a couple of months or a couple of months, and if it still feels too much, we'll dial it back. Well, I just don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I hear you. You're the client. That's all you can do, Suzanne. And thinking you're going to get 100% of the practice to schedule is not a realistic expectation. Doesn't mean you don't.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, none of these.
We did get someone who had said from the beginning he wouldn't. And I was speaking with him last week, and then he decided that he would. So we have him scheduled.
Yeah, and it's your responsibility, Paul, after 3 months, go back to somebody who's reluctantly done it. And said and say you were reluctant to schedule. I asked you to try it for a couple of months. I find these calls valuable. Do you want to continue? And then they're going to say yes or no. But you can't force them. All right.
Those that did do the scheduling. I mean, the reception has been, I think, fantastic. I mean, they've received it really well, and a lot of them are, like, really, like, happy we're doing it. So,
okay.
You know, those ones that are holding out, they're, you know, one particular family has cultural differences. They're just, you know, I don't think that they understand maybe what we're asking them to do. I mean, it could be. I'm not saying it's absolutely true, but I'll talk to them. When I talk to them next, I think it's this Friday, I have them on my call list. But, you know, the ones that did do the scheduling, and we've been doing it now for, you know, 4 or 5 months, they've all said, this is great that you're doing this. You know, I haven't had anybody come back and say, this is getting old or, you know, anything like that. You know what I mean? So I'm, and myself, I sense it. I hear it in the client's voices. You know, they're relieved to hear from me. You know, they're relieved that we have these calls. So.
And these are the people that are doing the plans now and finding CDs and doing an insurance.
That's right, Susan.
I think
you're right.
You're talking to them all the time.
That's right. They're doing more business with us. That's exactly right.
Well, Paul, I don't. I said a couple of minutes ago that I knew the answer. You ready for the answer?
Yeah, I forgot the question, but go ahead. Give me the answer.
Well,
what was the question?
The question was from early. You're not getting your assets.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Here's the reason you're not getting as much as you want. First of all, it's not directly under your control. The longer you live your brand with your clients, the less reluctant they're going to be the more apt they are to refer to you. It's one thing to say I'm going to do this. It's another thing 6 months later to still be doing it. They love it, and they see what you're doing is different. So part of it is you're more likely to get referrals consistently the longer you maintain your Supernova service model. The other thing is you're not asking enough. I mean, you just told me that everybody who's doing this likes it. Has everybody, I'd ask you, have you had an opportunity to have a referral conversation with everyone who has said they liked it?
No.
Well,
a lot of them, yes, but not all of them, no.
Well, if every time you meet with a client or you're talking to a client, if you will take a minute, just take a minute before you make that call to that client. I know you don't get many walk-ins with COVID and all that. I mean, walk-in clients. But if you consistently are taking advantage of the referral opportunities, I think you're going to see you don't get more than you. I taught my kids that. You never get more than you ask for. So if you are asking on a consistent, not in an obnoxious way, but Bill, when we met back when we talked back in October, you said some really great things about what the practice, what we were, the refinements we're making in practice. That really meant a lot to me. Do you know anyone else who might appreciate that same type of whatever it is, service, follow-up, whatever? You got to ask. People don't wake up in the morning and say, you know, this is the 9th of February. I need to give Paul a referral. You got to keep asking. And, again, not every time you see somebody, but every time it feels right to you. And maybe you get even a little more aggressive than that. I know I've talked to you Bill, but I would love to help your friends or whatever around the ways that I've helped you. So just make sure you're tracking your referral page so you know exactly where you are before you talk to a client. If you would just take a couple of minutes before you have your client calls and get a handle on where you are in the review process, you're more likely to recognize the opportunity to have a referral call. All right?
Yeah, okay. I'm going
to
do
it. And I want you to track it. What I'm going to ask you is when we meet next month, is the first thing, well, almost the first thing, is I'm going to ask you how many referral conversations that you've had. And I'm not doing that to be ugly. I just, if you keep it at the front of your mind, you're doing everything else so well.
This is the missing piece. All right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree. Yep.
All right.
I'm going to do it.
What? Gosh darn it, it's almost lunchtime.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to send you the thing that says centers, not centers of influence, but formal investment process. We didn't get around today to your practice overview, and that's important. You got a lot of work to do there. I'll send you some. Do one thing. Go to this is around your practice overview. Go to the CFP website, and they have a code of ethics and professional responsibility. And I'm not suggesting you copy this, not at all. I'm just trying to give you an idea of things that fit in the your practice overview. You know that you got those three, the basic beliefs, what clients can expect and what I expect. Like, for example, have you ever told a client that everything they tell you is confidential?
Yeah, I've said that, yeah.
Okay, good. Because if I think people have the right to expect that, and if you're prospecting somebody and you have the overview of your practice, and in there you talk about confidentiality, and they've never had that confidentiality conversation with their present provider, they might wonder if it is confidential. I don't know if you saw this stuff with Bank of America last week or week before where they gave up client information to the government.
Code and standards?
Pardon?
Did you say code and standards?
It's called Code of Ethics and Professional Responsibility.
Yeah, I have it right here.
Yeah, act in the client's best interest. That's what we're looking for. Under basic beliefs, I mean, this is the core of your practice, who you are. I'll always act in your client's best interest. Again, I'm not saying to copy these, but it's just kind of get your mind working on what this would look like. And I'll send you a couple other things that look that'll help you with putting that practice overview together. And then I'll include, when I teach people to do this practice overview, one day I was sitting waiting for a call to start, and I said, what am I going to do if somebody I'm teaching this practice overview to says to me, well, what's yours? And I'll just give you an example. My basic beliefs are number one, an advisor will do more business with a smaller practice. And again, this is my contract with you. Number two, clients will gladly give referrals if their advisor makes himself or herself referable. Number three, an advisor must never assume a client knows everything we do for them. Number four, service is the backbone of growth. So those are my basic beliefs. And what you can expect from me, and you can think about it, you and Suzanne, and tell me if I'm living it, I'll be fully prepared. Number two, I'll live by my teachings and my dealings with clients. I'll bring energy to each meeting. I will challenge the traditional thinking that has made an advisor successful. And five, a thoughtful, simple, actionable strategy for their practice. That's what you can expect from me, a thoughtful, simple, actionable strategy for your practice. Here's what I expect of you. Regular attendance. You do that. You guys hadn't ever missed one. Number two, an open mind from those I'm coaching. Number three, preparation while understanding the time demands and advisors. I expect preparation while understanding the time demands on advisors and CSAs. And the final thing I expect is an open and frank dialogue. I mean, I hope that describes what you feel. And the reason I give this to you is that's the sense I want you to have with your practice overview
when clients and prospects look at it. Wow, that's something. I'm not getting that from my present advisor. And I'll send you a few things that will help you put all that together. All right?
Hey, Rob, last question. Do you find that advisors that you're coaching, you know, the initial first 3 to 4 months, you know, I'm thinking back to them, and I was really busy. You know, we had a lot going on. And, you know, it was kind of like absorbing all this was kind of like taking a drink from a fire hose. And now I find myself where I feel like, you know what, I got to go back and review this stuff because I feel like I've, you know, I got to, yeah, I did it so fast that I don't remember it. Is that common? I mean,
that's why this originally, Paul, was a 12-week course. I'm going back 10 years, 8 years. And we found it exactly what you just said. We covered so much, and it all made so much sense, but it
we forgot it.
It made so much sense, we forgot it. They forgot a lot of it. And we knew that because when we would talk about something that we already had covered and it was like new blown snow, we knew they weren't getting it all. So that's when we went to the monthly call, added the monthly call.
And then the other thought that comes to mind when I look at this is that, you know, in 5-6 months, you know, our contract is done. Is there another level? Do I go to level? Yeah. Is there like a level 2 that I can go to?
Yeah, what we do, we can design about anything you want, and what we it's a lot more reactive. We're talking about specific cases. So the answer is yeah. If you say, can we go monthly for, you know, another 6 months? Sure, we'd be happy to do that.
Yeah.
So. There's nothing formal. You know, at each step here, the first 9 weeks is fairly standardized, and then the next 9 months, which is what we're doing now, are more specific to your practice. And then after that, it's really specific towards your practice because I'm reacting to a lot of the things that that you're dealing with.
Okay.
All right?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, good to talk with you. Next time
we talk,
you too. Thank you.
The next time we talk, it's going to be close to spring. Good.
I'm ready.
Enjoy your time down there.
Hey, one other thing, Paul, just to follow up on what I said, I knew the answer. I pulled out a growth business plan that I did a couple months ago, and to add $50,000 to your practice, you needed to have. You needed to have X amount I'm trying to read and talk at the same time. To do a certain amount of business, it all got down to the number of appointments that you had. And I think we figured that 15, it took, you said you had a close rate of 90%. It took about around 20 appointments to get you to your goal, because you 20 appointments, you have a close rate of 90%. That's 18 new clients. 18 new clients at a minimum of $500,000. All of a sudden, you bring your. So this thing is. My point is, this thing is. You got to control what you can control. You can't control the market. You can't control clients saying yes, but you can control getting in front of people. You can do it. Just stay with it. You're already doing it. You're already doing it.
Thank you very much.
All right. Talk to you.